Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt, hanging out with you here this morning. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. You'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Josh, it's a weird morning. It's a weird morning.
Why you say that?
You know, I was talking with Jeremy and Joe as they were leaving and we were coming in, and it's like, you know, the morning starts, Darlene watching practice from the sideline in a hoodie and shorts. Joe Yurden, friend of the show, friend of the station, described it as, if you could describe someone's posture as pissed, that would be accurate. So that's wonderful news to begin the day.
Super cool.
And then I get here this morning, and, you know, real quick, I'll sit in my car for like 5-10 minutes, you know, gather my belongings, and I'll check Twitter to see if I missed anything, you know, within the 10-20 minutes it took me to drive here. And I see Mel Kiper apparently wants, like, defenses shot into the sun. And I'm just like, I feel like we're reacting a little too aggressively. I feel like we're being a bit much.
You want to add something else on top of this?
No, but hit me with it.
Jaromir Jagr is going to retire at the end of the season from
professional
hockey. And he's 52.
He's 52. I feel like he's 20 years too late.
Hey, whoa. 20 years?
You're 52. Why are you still playing hockey?
That put him at 32.
That feels
exhausting. Skinner is 32. You want Jeff Skinner to retire?
All right, 15 then. 35 to 37-ish? In that range, should have retired.
Alex Ovechkin.
Also should probably retire.
No. Jaromir Jagr
also,
is
also
like,
real quick on that. He's a physical specimen that like drinks Coke out of a water bottle during games and like he's fine.
Well, yeah.
That's not normal.
Yeah, it is.
At a professional athlete level?
For the 80s and 90s
very
it was.
Not normal.
Hey, whatever.
But like I'm having this moment today and real quick.
There's a lot going on.
We will talk about Darlene because that one I am genuinely nervous about. But on the Mel Kiper thing, and that's sort of where I want to take today's show as well, is like, can we all relax? It's been 2 weeks. It's not even October yet. Like,
well, yeah.
Like, offenses will figure it out. Offensive coordinators also get paid just like defensive coordinators get paid. Mm-hmm. They'll figure it out. I also think a major problem with teams not being able to go deep is their offensive lines suck for the most part across the league. It's why offensive linemen, when they're good, typically don't hit free agency.
Joel.
Until, like, they're very old.
Right.
I mean, even Mitch Morris, you know, going from the Chiefs to the Bills was a little weird, but the Chiefs had kind of somewhat already replaced him and were sort of looking forward, and the Bills had to make him the highest paid center in football. Did anyone ever think Mitch Morris was the best center in football?
No, but he was good.
He was good enough.
He was serviceable.
He was better than average.
And that's, if you're a lineman and you're better than average, and I'm not saying all of them are, but if you're better than average, you're going to get a big contract. And sure, there's some that are different than others. Like Deion Dawkins is
We took a call last week on Deion Dawkins, someone not being like,
right,
thinking he's constantly overrated.
He's
about correctly rated. There's just not many great offensive linemen in football.
Right.
There just isn't.
Because your job is to stop seven other guys built exactly like you from getting to your quarterback, and half the time...
Well, I think there's other reasons why offensive line play is down in the NFL.
Well, no, I'm just saying in general, like not even right now, just over the course of the NFL's history, linemen have always had issues with this because it's a hard job to do. That's one of the harder jobs, physically wise.
It takes a lot of chemistry
for
with all five guys.
I mean, we saw in the Bears game, the Bears' right guard, was just standing there looking around like, who do I block? And there's three open guys and all three of them get to Caleb Williams.
It takes incredible amount of chemistry. It takes you just being flat out a good player.
Yep.
But like, college more than the NFL is like notorious for, the trenches win national championships. Yeah. I mean, just flat, Alabama dominated the 2010s into the 2020s purely off the fact of they had the best front seven on defense and they had the best front five on offense.
Yep.
It was year over year. That's what won them national championships. Mark Ingram gets the Heisman Trophy. You know, Tua Tagovailoa gets the Tank for Tua headlines. But that's what did it for him. Georgia's doing the same thing now. I mean, look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They have most of the defensive line.
They're literally
Georgia.
They are the Philadelphia Bulldogs.
And then, you know, look at the Bills. Cedric Van Pran Granger is a fifth round pick, but all of us here starting center for Georgia for 5 years and we're like, now wait a second.
Right.
That's interesting. And then you look at this year, Texas. Texas's big thing is their offensive line play. If four of their five starters have played for 3 years together, Calvin Banks Jr. is going to be probably the first tackle taken off the board. What are they now? The first ranked team since 2008, they're ranked number one in the AP poll, and they're having Arch Manning go back there and effectively not miss a beat, even though he at times looked lost against UTSA. But because of that offensive line just holding up like it does, you're fine. They've also honored like their fourth, fifth running back, carving out like 10 yards a carry.
I have an interesting comparison here, and I don't know if it's fully there yet. Are offensive linemen like relief pitchers in baseball? You have
not sexy, but you need them.
Yeah, and 6 times out of 10 they're going to let you down, but the 4 times they pick you up, they really pick you up.
Well, remember, I mean, too, what's also the best thing about an offensive lineman? If you don't hear anything. If I hear nothing about an offensive lineman, he's likely having a great day. And that's why I've been a big proponent of, you know, like, they signed Deion Dawkins. He had his best year last year. He's continuing into this year. Mm-hmm. Spencer Brown got paid right before the season started. I thought that was great to do so. He's an ascending player.
Osiris Torrance is probably going to get the same thing in a few
years.
We'll
see. I mean, he's going through a little bit of a sophomore slump. But why
Spencer Brown.
Yeah, but even like drafting him in the first round. Mm-hmm. I mean, they ultimately don't. They draft him in the second round. But I was big on him potentially even being a first round pick because of the ability he had at guard. If they could have three of their five offensive linemen locked up for the next 5 years, you didn't even have to worry about it.
Well, and even look
they were heading in the right direction.
Look at Connor McGovern too. I mean, he is proven to be pretty versatile in terms of playing all last year at left guard. Yep. And then over the summer, it's like, hey, remember when you used to play center? Can you do that again? Sure. And it's working.
Sure.
Like it's working so far. I mean, sure, there were two issues, but in terms of fumbles from Allen, but one was not on the snap, and the other one was when he had his glove on because of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really think you can really fault anything so far from Connor McGovern in terms of being a center and snapping the ball. Because obviously the center has to block as well, but would you say 75% of the center's job is to snap the ball correctly to your quarterback?
No, I'd say 50. The other 50 is being quarterbacking of the offensive line.
Oh, that's
line.
True. They are kind of the leader of.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair.
I would put it 50-50.
That's fair because I didn't think of him as like the leader of the offensive line, but you're right. That's true.
They help call protections. Everything like that.
Okay.
But for me, I think we're going too far.
Yeah.
Into the aggressive, like the league needs to step in, cover or two high safeties is ruining the league. It's been around for a few years, and ultimately, offenses will adapt. The great quarterbacks will still play great. They're still going to have their moments. Also, I think another big issue, and this pains me to say, because as a preseason denier, this has pained me. But like, yeah, maybe your starter should play a little bit in the preseason, because oftentimes in these last few years, not just the Bills, but across the board, NFL offenses have seemed just shaky at best. But in, you know, 2-3 years before, you know, you did have guys like Allen and Mahomes lighting everybody up. 2020 is kind of the perfect example of that, you know, now 4 years ago, where nobody had preseason football, and it did somewhat help offensive numbers explode early on.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're being all a little aggressive. You know, talk to me at week 10. If offensive numbers, and specifically passing numbers, are still down, and like the leading passing yards guy is going to be like 3,500 yards, and the most touchdown passes we'll have this year is like 28, then talk to me. Now we're starting to get towards like the 80s and the 70s. I get it. But right now I'm like, relax, calm down. Like, teams are still figuring themselves out. There's a lot of injuries going around as well. Ask literally any fantasy owner. You're likely stressing about one of your guys being down. I think there's a number of issues, but like to see like going on ESPN that like Mel Kiper's like, nah, too high safety should be banned. I'm like, all right. I get it's ESPN. I understand. But like, oh, let's chill.
Is this like the sports cliche of there's a superstar player coming onto a team. He earns his starting spot, and then he kind of slacks off for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, this young new hotshot comes in, proves himself, and takes the starting role. That's what defensive coordinators are doing right now. They figured out how to finally stop these deep ball explosive plays for most of the time. Mm-hmm. And now offensive coordinators are sitting up like, oh, man, we got to figure something out here. What's going on? We should just ban that. That's not fair.
And that's my thing.
Offensive coordinators are not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Kiper is the one that said that. But at the same time, if we're all thinking it, they have to be thinking it too, right? If we're thinking about how much this has changed, how much these defenses have impacted this, offensive coordinators are, one, probably a little upset because they figured they had it made. They figured out what to do to combat against these good defenses and just get the ball over the top. But now they're just spending their time, okay, what's next? What can we do next to change the game and get ahead of these defenses again?
I think that's my thing, is like any of this talk is just, it's downplaying offensive coordinators and the importance they play, or even offensive head coaches, the importance they play in scheming up to where we got to the point where, yeah, defenses were getting carved up. Did rule changes help? Of course. But that's what made it so fun. Offenses have changed all the time, though. I mean, this is the natural progression of the sport.
I mean,
I don't think it's ever going to get to the point where running backs are yearly running for like close to 2,000 yards, and all of a sudden we're talking again about, you know, is a 2,000 yard rusher going to break the record and they're winning MVP? I just don't see that ever happening.
But we always see the change between running backs and wide receivers. Right, we always see that fluctuation up and down.
But I don't even think it's ever going to get there. I think it's going to change within this year.
What the what do you mean? The scheme thing?
I think passing numbers will start to go up as the year goes on. Wide receivers are too talented across the league. Quarterback play is too good. And offensive coordinators have never been smarter. I think defenses have like kind of gotten to the forefront. And if you've got talent, if you've got the right mind, Sean McDermott with the Bills, sure, you're good. But right now we're just seeing this kind of like, oh, okay, all right, we've got to like change this up. I do think, though, a big part of this is not the too high safety look. I think it is poor offensive line play, or at least the depth of offensive line play, is not really there for a lot of teams. You're already seeing the Eagles, without Jason Kelce, look a little bit different and can't do things as much as they'd like to, and that's one guy.
I think you can also put this, if you want to look more in the forefront of things, in what will be in the spotlight, because, yes, I think your offensive line point is correct, but I think what people are going to focus more on, aside from the coordinators, is quarterbacks and how they play the game. You're going to see a lot more people try to get their quarterback to play like Josh Allen, to play like Patrick Mahomes. And obviously they were already trying to do that because those two are the two best quarterbacks in the NFL. But when you look at who you have around the league that's available to be able to combat these offenses and take care of this too high safety issue, you have Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, and who else? Right?
Yeah.
Like you don't have those guys that can throw that ball and uncork it deep downfield and make something happen.
At a consistent rate.
Because like Anthony Richardson can throw the ball down the field, but he can't do it accurately. He can't do it consistently. And you look at I look at a guy like Baker Mayfield too. He has Mike Evans, one of the most consistent wide receivers in the NFL, in NFL history. But Baker Mayfield has never been really thought of as this, I'm going to uncork it and throw it over the top and throw a 90-yard touchdown. Right? Like, it's not going to be, that's not his style. But at the same time, are quarterbacks like him who have that ability or potentially have that ability going to try to adapt to that, right? Or are coaches going to want them to adapt to that because of this change? Like, is that the solution that these offensive coordinators are going to try to think up? Are they going to try to get their quarterbacks to change themselves?
I think for me, it's going to be, this is also not going to be like the one look. I mean, it's already not the one look defensive coordinators are giving you, but like when you start to have like teams regularly, I mean, it's not like points are down, it's passing numbers are down.
Yeah.
And passing touchdown numbers are down.
Passing yards too.
Because, yards, touchdowns, all that.
If you look at it, you could just do what the Bills have done the first 2 weeks here and pass the short ball and go down the field.
That's what the Chiefs did last year.
Right.
I mean, so like ultimately, and the Chiefs' biggest problem is their wide receivers were actively a hindrance to their team. It was not like they were just bad. They were actively hurting the team. And so that's ultimately my thing, is just defenses will then have to adjust accordingly to essentially everyone running a sort of West Coast spread offense of bubble screens and quick outs and stuff like that and RPOs. They're going to have to adjust and bring the safeties in, which then will lead to these teams going, oh, the two safeties are in, go deep.
it's a chess match. Stop watching movies to think football is dumb. Yeah, it is a chess match.
You lull the defense into a sense of security of this is what they're going to do, yes. And then boom, there it goes over the top.
We are through 2 weeks. And it is a topic to discuss. I don't disagree because, I mean, you've brought up the list too of like how starkly passing touchdown numbers over like the first week, 2 weeks have dropped over the last 3 years. But it's not going to stay the same. It is going to change. The league is favoring quarterbacks. They always will. Even when running the ball was the way to go, quarterbacks were still the stars. The Jets have not forgotten Joe Namath. He played in the 60s. So, I mean, like, that's my thing is, like, the days of the undefeated Dolphins where Bob Greasy threw, like, a total of 7 passes in a game. That's not coming back. We're not going back to the days of the 2000 Ravens with Jamal Lewis running the ball and it's all defense and Trent Dourif will just don't throw picks. They're not going to go back to that. But they are going to have to kind of play around with this. I don't want defenses to stop playing the game because I like watching quarterbacks throw touchdowns. I watch college football for that. You know, as ridiculous as that sounds, the saying has stayed the same. College, you win games by scoring touchdowns. Who cares about how many first downs you have? Score big touchdowns. It's big plays. In the NFL, it is putting together first downs. It is sustaining drives. It is going for it when appropriate. It is going for it when you've got the advantages.
It's possession.
It's possessions.
Yeah.
That's why, like, while yes, turnovers are huge, that is where having the game-changing quarterbacks like Mahomes and Allen does kind of change the game. Because before, and that's why I think a lot of coaches still harp on this, the turnovers are disasters. But when you do have the game-breaking quarterbacks like Mahomes and Allen, one or two picks in a game doesn't kill you because every possession those two have feels too much.
Do you think that this could send ripples down to college football?
Absolutely not. College is not talented enough.
Well, in the way that coaches try to coach their quarterbacks or that quarterbacks and other players in the offense want to play. Because if you're looking, if I'm a college quarterback right now in my sophomore, junior year, and I'm saying, all right, I want to make it to the NFL, right? And I've played like this for so long, but hey, that might not work at the NFL level. Should I change my style of play? And same with
this.
Like wide receivers, or even if you're like an offensive coordinator in college.
But I mean, we already went through this with pro style based off college style, how guys couldn't take it from under center, or they didn't even know how to call plays because they were all just kind of given to them from the sideline. Yeah. That's probably never going to change. It's more or less just when they get into the NFL, you simplify it and then sort of give them more as they go. It's why you will see at times a talented rookie year and then a sophomore slump. They're giving them maybe too much or more than they could handle, what have you. College, it won't change just purely off the fact of teams aren't deep enough and talented enough. I think especially now in the NIL era, you're seeing just, you know, as an example, the SEC, Ole Miss. Ole Miss in the old BCS era, even the 4-team college playoff era, couldn't compete with Alabama, with Georgia, with Auburn, when Texas had a good coach with Texas, Oklahoma, USC, what have you. Now all of a sudden they can because teams are not able to just hoard talent like Smaug in The Hobbit and just treasure. They couldn't just do that. I mean, Alabama had effectively walk-ons as 4 stars. You know, and it only goes up to 5 stars. Now, all of a sudden, the talent pool is being distributed much more. Guys that aren't starting by, like, year two are transferring to go to Ole Miss or Mississippi State or what have you. The talent pool is not deep enough. We're in the NFL. We're seeing practice squad players. We're seeing it on the Bills. Practice squad players can come in and make a legitimate impact on the game. That is not always true in college. Oftentimes, if you get like that guy that's like the 3rd, 4th, 5th guy on the roster, it's a disaster. There's a clear difference. I think it's a big reason, and again, just kind of bring the point back home to the offensive line, that I think is the big reason why passing numbers are down right now is offensive line play is not that great. Offensive line play top to bottom is not that awesome. You have the stars. Don't get me wrong. You have great players. It's not deep enough. You know, here, perfect example. Cleveland loses 2 of their offensive linemen in week 1. They couldn't do anything. Dallas, who the next week gets annihilated by New Orleans. I mean, annihilated. It was never a game. But the week prior against Cleveland, they're able to just pin their ears back and just ruin the game. And I think that's the thing. Offensive line, it never is given the credit it really is due. It is one of the most – the trenches in general, defensive line counts as well – is one of the most important position groups in the sport. If you have a bad either, you are limited in what you can do. That's why I always understood why Bean was trying to build the defensive line. My issue was I never thought he went for high potential guys. I thought he went for high floor guys that would just be good rotational pieces. I always thought that their plan was sort of to build the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles defensive line, which was a rotation, but they did have elite guys like a Fletcher Cox who could – you kept him in the entire game, and he was a game wrecker. That's where I think they want to go get Von Miller. Ultimately, I think the plan works if Von never tears his ACL, because you're seeing it now, a year removed from that torn ACL recovery.
He's got sacks in back-to-back games.
And his pressure rate has been off the charts. He's been everywhere on the field. And you're seeing it as well. Rousseau, 3 sacks in game one. And he's kind of also been around the field. Ed Oliver, same thing. I think we're having a very different conversation about Von Miller as a Bill if he never tears his ACL. Number one, I think his first year he's got well over double-digit sacks. He was at 8 before he gets hurt, and we still had half the season to go. And you're likely also looking at a Rousseau not having a down year last year where he only had 5. It's a very different situation that they've got there. But I just don't think it's as aggressive of a discussion as it is. I think it's putting the cart before the horse. Again, if we're by week 10, 11, 12, and again, like we're sitting here going, man, the leading passing yards guy is on pace for 3,800 yards, maybe, and the most passing touchdowns in the league this year is going to be 30. Sure, then we'll look at it and go, all right, has this too high safety look like just completely destroyed what offenses are able to do? And then yes, I do believe the league will absolutely act. Offenses is what sells. College football is built off the big play. It's what's kept it popular, even with all the conference realignments and rivalries and traditions kind of being thrown to the wayside. You know big plays are coming. I mean, Arch Manning against UTSA has like 3 top 10 plays because it's just like they're all like 75 yards, what have you. Oregon for years was forgotten in the Pac-12. They weren't built to win a national championship, but they were exciting. They were really cool to watch. And, what's one of the most hated national championships of recent memory? It's the rematch between Alabama and LSU a number of years ago where it ended like 10-3. It was awful. No one liked it. It was awful.
I think also, too, what this is going to lead to on the defensive side is how teams that don't have the better safeties or the good defensive mind, like how the Bills have Sean McDermott. Like, if you look at the Bills' safety room, not to say that the safeties aren't bad, right? But I think McDermott's defensive game plan certainly elevates them more than other coaches would. But if you're a team that doesn't have a good defensive mind and doesn't have the best safety room, I'm kind of interested to see how these teams adapt to this and try to create their own version of it or just improve themselves to come to this style of play, right? Because not every team is focused solely on this. And not every team, even the ones that are heavily using this too high safety look, they're not using it the whole game. They're just using it in the right moment. And I think that's the other part too, is this whole discussion of banning this, it's not like this is running the entire game. You can't do that. It just doesn't work. Like you were saying earlier, if you just have a team that runs a bunch of RPOs and bubble screens, eventually those teams are going to have to pull those safeties in and change it up.
Well, and also what you're doing, what the defense wants you to do.
Right.
And which is not what you want to do.
Exactly.
You want to confuse them. And I think that's the thing. That's why I'm like, it's so early. Let's calm down.
Right.
Because teams are doing – the Bills aren't even running the ball all that well.
Right.
That's the crazy thing. Like, people are excited about James Cook. He won Offensive Player of the Week. Cool. Like, he had 3 touchdowns. Didn't really play that much. I think he played half of, like, their 44 snaps on offense.
Right.
But the Bills themselves are not actually even running the ball all that well. The first half against Arizona they did.
Yeah, and then the second half was
not good.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's the thing. It's like, even running the ball is not necessarily a good solution. It is just it's a kind of solution now. And you're going to have to see teams react to it and change. I'm excited for that. I don't see it as a problem. I see it as something to keep an eye on with the league as it goes. And let's not act like big passing numbers are just going to completely disappear or not being seen at all. You already mentioned the Anthony Richardson 60-yard bomb to Al Pierce. Sam Darnold, I just saw it on the replays here on the TV, had a 99-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson.
Yeah.
And he was double covered, but he threw it in a perfect spot.
And you know what else?
And Jefferson was there.
When you look at the All-22 on that, He had another wide receiver wide open that he could have thrown to if he didn't want to throw it to Justin Jefferson. That receiver came in and blocked for Jefferson so he could get to the end zone.
So I think for me is like, maybe let's take a timeout. Let's relax. Again, let's wait a few more weeks and actually put trust into the part of the field, part of the game that we enjoy so much and actually give faith to them that they'll figure it out.
And going back to Anthony Richardson, let's not forget who his head coach is, Shane Steichen. Also, look at all of the other offensive minds that almost got head coaching jobs last year in the offseason. The one in Bobby Slowick, right?
Houston.
Who's the one in Detroit?
Ben Johnson.
Those two. Those two are going to become head coaches at some point. And I think we're going to look at them as potentially the next Andy Reid in terms of coming up with a new revolutionary offensive play style that's going to kind of combat this a little bit. And it's going to confuse teams.
Or the new guy, Clint Kubiak with the Saints.
Right, yeah.
Where they have literally lit the league on fire.
And they're
by changing it up.
I hope they do it again this week because I just
by attacking the middle of the field using spacing. I mean, like they've been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, any Alvin Kamara fantasy owners like keep it going, baby. But I mean, Chris Olave, please.
Touchdown. Right.
But like it's not like it's all been doom and gloom and we're in an era where like everyone looks like the 1984 Bears or 85 Bears and the 2000 Ravens.
It just looks that way because of the fact like if Allen and Mahomes weren't like, not that Allen Mahomes have had bad weeks, but if they would have had more characteristic first 2 weeks, this would be a completely different conversation. Because everyone that's looking at this and freaking out and going, oh, we have to ban this, you're looking at it as, well, even the superstars can't combat it. Well, look at what Derek Carr is doing. Derek Carr with
looks
his...
like the MVP frontrunner.
Yeah, he is going insane in New Orleans when everybody thought he was washed up and done for 2 years ago. And now
last year too,
and even again with Anthony Richardson, a little more accuracy on this kid, and he's got some of the craziest touchdowns of the season so far. I mean, he already has one of them to Alec Pierce.
A little bit more. I need a lot more.
Well, okay, right, fair. But my point is the only reason people are freaking out is because the big teams, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, the Ravens, the 49ers. I mean, not really the 49ers. That's never been their real style of play, throwing it over the top. Yep. But the teams that you know can throw the ball down the field and will throw the ball down the field are the ones that are not doing it. So that's why everyone's freaking out. Everyone's, you know, it's the end of the world because those four teams can't do it. Well, they'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's just going to take a little time. Yeah. And some of them don't have the personnel. The Bills might not have the personnel to do that anymore. It might be just a little bit of a different play style from them, a different type of offense. That's what we've talked about all offseason.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. I mean, what are your takes on the defensive numbers, the passing numbers? I'm somebody, let's be patient, let's see. And also, I enjoy the chess match of the game of football. I don't want it to just be all offense all the time. Again, 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join the show. We've also got Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock to give his thoughts on this as well. I'm definitely going to ask him, but also a check-in on the Bills as well. They had practice yesterday, although the first official injury report of the week is expected to come out today with them playing on Monday night. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I think the league is growing, it's changing, evolving, if you will, as well. And rosters are built in some ways maybe a little bit different than they used to be built. And schematics have changed a little bit as well. So I think with that, you're seeing the game change then as well.
There's Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott talking about the change in the league. I mean, as a defensive guy, he's probably got to be like, nah, I'm all right with it.
he probably loves it.
I'm the star of the show. Let's go. You know, I mean, I feel like that's the thing. In the modern era, defensive coordinators, defensive head coaches, they get a bad rap. You know, everybody wants the offensive guy to be their head coach. They don't want to go through offensive coordinators, what have you. I still don't. Don't get me wrong. My opinion has not changed on that. But, you know, McDermott's probably got to be sitting there, maybe in the back corner of his mind going, yeah, baby, I'm the bride now. No longer the bridesmaid. 803-0550 is the number to call. We're talking defensive schemes today, and are we jumping the gun a little bit on freaking out about the passing numbers through 2 weeks? And we're going to get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll start today with David. David, you're on the line. How are we doing this morning?
Doing great, guys. Hey, three points I want to make. First one is I enjoy listening to your show when I get the opportunity. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
First thing is I'm patient. Okay, and I really think wait a little bit. We're going to see a little more of the passing game come out. That downhill pass at Jefferson was lucky. Probably two stinky safeties back there. So
that's probably one thing. Helped.
Right. And I wanted to call him last week, but I didn't get the opportunity. You guys are talking about Brady and his planning and stuff like that. And the point that when you guys were talking popped into my head, the game last year, where after we learned he had a totally different game plan, but the run game was working, he goes, I'm sticking with it. And normally you don't see that. We didn't see that with our previous offensive coordinator. He just tried going with the game plan that he had in mind. Brady does have a game plan for each, and some of these games I'm sure are going to be high passing games. We'll see, but I think that's the way he operates. So I'm going to hang up and listen to you guys.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call. And yeah, that was the Dallas game last year.
That was, as soon as he said that, I was like, that's Dallas.
I mean, and that's the thing, is like that's going to kind of a game that for Dallas will live in infamy because it was kind of a sign of things to come. And for Bills fans, it's kind of a weird thing because, yeah, like they won by just basically, and yeah, Brady was pretty open about it the next day in sort of his post-game presser.
Right.
Where he was just like, yeah, like we were willing to change it up. We were planning on it. It just never came. I would also say, and this is why, and I like that Dave's point too, he's patient. Week one, they went up against one of the worst run defenses in football. And in the first half, the running game really worked. They did go to the passing game much more in the second half, and that also worked. And they were able to not claw out a victory. Again, I look at that game very weird. The scoreline looked closer than it felt like it was, especially in the second half. Mm-hmm. They ultimately did have a chance to win it, don't get me wrong. But by the first drive of the third quarter, Buffalo scores. It's a tie game. That's right. Why I was bringing up for the Miami week. It's not – the comebacks are not the same. You know, Arizona let that game slip very quickly. And Buffalo was able to kind of press on them. It's ultimately a special teams touchdown that even keeps them alive in that game at all. I will say, though, I think passing games will go up, namely because, as I've mentioned, I don't think the Bills have been running the ball particularly well. I think James Cook has been solid, fine. We also haven't seen them being pushed to the brink of like, hey, you need to throw the ball. You're in a shootout here. You know, again, Arizona, one of the worst run defenses in football, and they leaned on that in the first half. It worked. Their biggest problem was they didn't have the ball. The defense was still adjusting to Kyler Murray, I don't know, being able to run. I know, surprise. And then in game two, pick six, a lot of short drives. I mean, again, like offensive snaps.
Three picks.
Yeah, ultimately offensive snaps. I think they had under 50.
Yeah.
So you really didn't even get to see that team either.
Well, I think also, too, something, you know, there that he brought up was just the ability to change on the fly. And I think that's something we're going to really see out of Joe Brady as a coordinator as it goes on here, because that Dallas game was what, like his third game? As
something like that, yeah. It was relatively early.
So I think as he progresses as an offensive coordinator, I think a characteristic we'll use to describe him is adaptable. Yeah. You can take his offense and adapt it to any situation that you're in. If you're going to a game and your game plan is not working the way you want it to, okay, it's time to shift. It's time to move. And teams do that all the time. But it just feels like he might have... That might be like his bread and butter, is being able to change on the fly.
Because I think it is fair to bring up that not every offensive coordinator can. I would say Ken Dorsey couldn't.
No.
Their plan was, we are going to stretch the field passing the ball, even if we don't have the personnel, even if we're not getting appropriate blocking.
Even if it's not working. Even if we are going to keep 30 passes and only 10 of them have been caught, we're going to just keep throwing it down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to say you're going to keep throwing the ball. It's another thing to keep saying, to say you're going to keep throwing the ball to Diggs on a streak route, or, you know, Gabe Davis on a deep cross. Like,
and that's it.
That's it. No, mix in a slant, mix in just like a little dump off to the side. If you want to throw the ball a lot, you have to mix it up. And I think that's something that Dorsey never understood. Then we're going to see now. It doesn't seem that way. It seems the same thing in Cleveland,
well,
that's
too. The thing. He's not even calling plays in Cleveland.
Well, right. But still, he's part of that.
Yeah. Yes.
Mind the group that comes up with everything, and it's
the group think.
The group think. Yeah, sure.
Let's go to Jim here. Jim, you're on the line. How are we doing this morning?
Hi, guys. I do think it's part of it is the two high safeties, but I think mainly it's the lack of starters playing in the preseason. You're seeing it with the penalty. There's 20 penalties in that Eagles-Falcons game.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, I'd say at least half to 60%, are pre-snap. These guys aren't playing at all in the preseason. The penalties are killing drives. You got a ton of new coordinators, and you've got half the league where the quarterbacks have less years experience. That's all contributing to this. I don't think it's completely too high, but I think that is definitely a shift that's gone on. But that's just my take on it.
Yeah, Jim, thanks for the call. That was something I rushed by because I wanted to bring up the offensive line point. But again, I will say this, and it hurts me to my core to bring it up and to agree with it.
Playing players in the preseason?
Playing starters in the preseason.
Zach! Wait a minute. This is revolutionary. You're figuring it out.
I think it is. I think it is warranted. My thing has always been the absolute. I mean, I don't deny it. I'm paralyzed by the fear of my starter getting hurt in a meaningless scrimmage.
Look at what's going on with the Sabres right now with Rasmus Dahlin. He just got hurt 5 minutes into practice.
And that's always the argument that's brought up is guys can get hurt taking a shower. You know,
right? Right.
Kevin Cobb at Bills camp was running out for training camp, slipped and ruined and ended a season.
Yeah,
I get it. But it's the meaningless game aspect of it to me that right. I'm just like, what are we doing here? I've never been a proponent of the preseason or anything like that. But I do think there is some credibility to the fact of, you know, would we get a drive with Josh Allen? He was supposed to play game two.
We got in the first game, it was he's going to play the first quarter. And then in the middle of a drive, they took him out. And that's you never see that.
Because he was going to play the first quarter.
Yeah, but you kind of...
I kind of respect that from
still
McDermott.
I still remember. I think... I can't remember who said it. It was one of the commentators. I don't know if it was Chris or if it was whoever was on TV. But they were like, yeah, he just came out mid-drive. I understand he was only going to play a quarter, but this is a little weird. Like,
I respected McDermott so much for that. Like, no, I said you were playing 15 minutes.
I think it's a good point. Because if you're going to have so many changes, especially if this continues to get traction, if there's so many changes in the offseason and things like that, you're going to need your players to start more in these meaningless games because you're going to have to get them up to speed faster for the games that actually matter. And I think that plays into the offensive line play. I think by week five, maybe we'll see some of that disappear with teams that do have the better offensive lines. Because even the teams that have the good offensive lines are having problems right now. The Eagles, even though they lost Jason Kelce, the Eagles still have a good offensive line.
Yes.
But they're having their own issues right now, and I think part of that's on the coaching staff. Nick Sirianni
is a fraud.
Is a major fraud. But, yeah, I mean, it's still – time's going to have to tell on this. But if it's – like you said, if it's week 10 and we're still having this conversation, then it's – there's going to be something else going on here.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I have kind of – I have very much – and I don't like it. Believe me, it is going to be something that I'm probably going to seek a therapist about. But I do not like the fact that I am now on board with – okay, maybe the starters need to play like a lot in the preseason. Maybe
I win.
But another example, Bryce Young.
Yeah,
he plays a game in the preseason, or well, he played a few drives in the preseason. Mm-hmm. Game three against the Bills' backups to fringe roster players. And what did his first 2 weeks look like? He got benched.
Yeah.
Two starts into his second year. He's the former number one overall pick. Whether you agree with that or not, I mean, I wouldn't have taken number one overall. I understand the first round pick thing, but I would not have taken him number one overall. Already done.
Yeah.
And I mean, Dave Canales even said it. Like, I looked at the tape and we need to win games.
Right.
And yeah.
And that's a coach making a coaching decision.
And,
right
if, and if you look like at the tape.
It's a.
Bryce Young would have only stayed in for development reasons. The tape would tell you he should not be their starter.
Yeah. I mean, there was there's literally a replay where he jumped to throw the ball on a like a dump off and it hit the back of his center's head.
Oh boy, that's not good.
Like the camera literally like pans with the throw and then like snaps back because it hits the back of the center's head.
Mm-hmm. Pete Prisco of CBS, I'm just seeing this now, he tweeted this a little bit ago saying, offensive line play around the league is awful. They need to hit in camp, period. That's why scoring is down. That's why quarterback numbers are pedestrian. How can you become a good line when you can't hit? I think that's probably also something, too. That
brings up the old meaningless games.
Yeah.
Playing in meaningless games, you're then playing would not that practice is ever meaningless, but.
But I mean, I've brought up the poor offensive line play, and Prisco's bringing it up there. He probably has a very good point of you need to be able to hit in camp.
Is this where are we headed towards something where they could have a simulated like a simulator for offensive linemen? Like think about it that, like Ooh. You have a golf simulator, right? Mm-hmm. Where you play a round of golf just hitting at a screen. I'm not saying a lineman would just hit the screen, but something like that where you could have a lineman hit something and it would give you feedback rather than just hitting the dummies on the
No, because you're gonna need live reps. I think that's kind of the key to it.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a way where you could eliminate two people coming together at such force, and have that sort of, you know, still give that feedback of like, well, this, you know, you got to hit harder here or do something different here with your weight or whatever. But I don't know. That's tough. But yeah. I don't know. I wonder if that's something that we see down the road, especially to avoid injuries, especially with the Tua concussion conversation.
Daniel Jeremiah tweets this out 2 minutes ago. I heard Jeremy and Joe bringing this up too. Mm-hmm. If we're throwing out rule recommendations, let's go to the college hash marks, more space, more fun.
Yeah.
I think that's probably also something that should be brought up. More space.
What's the difference again?
I got to look that up in the break, but that's probably something to bring up as well. Of if you have more space, it's the same in hockey. And it's the same in soccer. When you have more space, goes up.
The European hockey game compared to the American hockey game is so much different. I mean, you hear it all the time. These guys have to come over here and adjust to smaller ice.
Yeah.
It's different.
They don't have as much space to work.
Right. But that's also what makes it the professional level compared to semi-professional or college or
But remember, like I mean, it's going to be one of those things where, but if scoring stays down, I actually really – that's the one – I could really see the NFL pushing if scoring were to stay down and ultimately they're seeing offenses really struggle.
I didn't realize it was this big of a difference.
Aren't the numbers farther too in college compared to the NFL? Like the 50 number, like, you know what I mean?
No, I mean, it's still 10 yards in between each.
Yeah,
I'm saying from the sidelines to the numbers.
Oh.
I'm
not sure. But the NFL.
I could be wrong, though.
In the NFL, the hash marks are 18 feet 6 inches wide. In college, they are 40 feet wide.
Oh, wow.
That's double of what it is in the NFL. I don't think. Maybe you shouldn't go that far.
But make it wider. Maybe tack on
like 10 extra feet.
Yeah, could be interesting.
Put it at 28. See how that goes.
803-0550 is the number to call if you want to jump in on this conversation. Sam, we're going to get to your call after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Welcome back, everyone. Quick segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We're going to go back to the phones here. We've got Sam on the line. Sam, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thanks for asking.
Doing good.
Yeah, two things. Hoping you could comment on, Mel Kiper. So I imagine he would want there to be only one guy back there. Or the two guys can only go as far as X or whatever.
But I think it was more. Sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, sorry. But what happens at the end of the half or the end of the game when there's the Hail Mary? I mean, is there okay? They're going to change the rule at that point, or you know, I mean, what
treat it like
do?
The onside kick where it's like, oh, you have to let everybody know you're going to do it, and it can only be done at like the last like 10 seconds of the half or 10 seconds of the fourth. It'd be ridiculous.
Right, and then what would the penalty be? Like ineligible defender downfield, 5 yards. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Right? Yeah. It's more of a thing. And Sam, thanks for the call, man. It seems to be more of a thing of just like, I'm upset, so I'm going to throw this out there.
Yeah. Well, no. So
and,
Mel
and ultimately, and everyone's attacking Mel too. I think rightfully, but like, it's sort of like. The two high safety thing isn't even like the big issue. It's a lot of like teams can still go vertical. I've seen Benjamin Solak of ESPN now actually too.
Yeah.
Talking about this where it's like it's not even necessarily like the vertical routes, the ones we all think of like just go run straight and we're going to throw it deep. Those are still available. It's the crossing routes,
right,
which the Bills did run to near perfection in 2020. They were known as like one of the most dangerous crossing teams in the league. Cole Beasley and Diggs just ate on those.
Right.
That's more the route that's being taken away, so you do have to go shorter. But the deep routes are still there. The problem is, and this has been my point constantly, is that the NFL is and will always be based off efficiency. It is sustaining drives. It is getting first downs. It is not stupid penalties that put you back 5-10 yards on a first down. It is constantly getting positive yards. So the idea of running a 40-yard, you know, streaking route and that being like your go-to play – doesn't make sense. It's why all of us get regularly frustrated when on second and one, just into enemy territory, you're not throwing the long ball. It's like, well, like it's only a yard. Like you can get that on third down. You're fine. Like,
yeah.
And even if you're, you know, across the 50, many teams argue you're in four down territory anyways. So like that's the thing. It's always about efficiency. So the idea then, okay, two of our more stretch the field plays regularly are gone. We're going to go to the shorter routes, but the vertical routes are still there. They are happening. It's just the other ones have been taken away and teams are sort of trying to figure it out.
To answer his original question, Mel Kiper's argument was that you have the players start closer. It's not that you just eliminate one of them. It's that you have them coming closer rather than being so far.
Yeah,
they can
run back if they want. It's just you
right.
can't start back there.
Right,
sort
you could
deal.
Just literally turn and sprint, which is kind of what the Bills secondary was doing against the Dolphins. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I remember watching many plays where as soon as the ball was snapped, you have Cam Lewis just boop dropping back or Christian Benford, all right, see ya. Like that's where he almost got his first interception, and that's how Jamarcus Ingram got one of his interceptions. Mm-hmm. Like you just turn around and run. And
also, real quick too, on the because we were talking about Daniel Jeremiah talking about moving the hash marks
yeah.
to the college base, which we found out was like big difference.
Yeah.
It sounds like no one wants that. Like college coaches don't like how wide their hash marks are. So they want it closer, if not the
medium.
NFL
put
rules.
Put them in the middle.
See, but I'm wondering too if like
maybe college coaches are 100% right, and it actually should be closer. That the 18 feet 6 inches or whatever it is is actually the way it should go, and not the 40 feet. and that's the thing, is like every tweet now I've seen from it is like either hell no or absolutely no. And reading that LSU article you brought up, reading it, you got guys like Ryan Day at Ohio State being like, oh, we hate this. We would actually like the NFL more. I think it's also one of those things, too, where it's like it's not helping our players prepare for the NFL game, or if it's more schematically. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to join on this conversation. But coming up next, after a quick timeout, we'll hear from our own Sal Capaccio as the Bills are practicing today, getting ready to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars for Monday Night Football. We'll hear from him next. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hour number two of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show rolls along and is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Zach Jones and Josh Mint hanging out with you here today. And we're going to the Western Hotline as we are joined by our own Sal Capaccio, as the Bills do have a game on Monday night against the Jacksonville Jaguars, part of a doubleheader, the other being Washington and Cincinnati. Practice yesterday, Sal. How'd it look?
Well, like a normal practice, and including Josh Allen having his hand taped still. I'm sorry, the glove on the hand and the fingers taped together with the glove, obviously. So, you know, the good news is, well, the bad news is they didn't have Trell Bernard or Taron Johnson, and we know that, right? I mean, that's bad news because it's obviously two very important players. The good news is, guys, everybody else practiced. Like, those are the only two guys right now dealing with injuries. Throughout all these injuries, yes, you still don't have Matt Milano, of course. You know, he's on IR. But of the active players on the roster, the only two who didn't practice yesterday are two very important players, but it is the only two. Dewan Smoot came back to practice. He's trending towards playing. And Javon Solomon came back to practice. He's trending towards being able to play. Whether or not, you know, he'd be active, you know, that might be just a numbers decision.
Sal, another thing too that McDermott said, and maybe it shouldn't have caught me by surprise, but it did a little bit when I saw it on Twitter, was that he just kind of outright said who would be starting at middle linebacker, and it's Baylen Spector. He kind of was somebody we were talking a little bit about in during training camp, of just, you know, couldn't stay healthy, you know, kind of didn't know where he was going. He was sort of connected with the Joe Andreessen stuff. But what'd you see against him with Miami, and then now, of course, going forward?
Baylen Spector is a very much a throwback classic middle linebacker. You know, the game, the position has changed a lot. We've seen, you know, even Terrell Bernard. Now he's Terrell Bernard is what you would call an undersized linebacker, but I push back a little bit on that these days. I think middle linebackers are becoming a little bit more undersized compared to what we always have seen from them. Baylen Spector is an inch shorter, but he's also 10 pounds heavier than Terrell Bernard. He is a guy that is more straight line, north and south, go make a tackle. He can go sideline to sideline. He's capable. He played a little bit of will linebacker early in his career with the Bills. They moved him exclusively now to the Mike linebacker, where he sets up everybody's in the middle of the defense. But he's more of your classic north-south linebacker, and I thought that's what he did. That's what he did well against Miami. I mean, the guy, I think he had 10 tackles in the time he was in there, and he missed, you know, whatever, the first couple series maybe it was, but because Bernard had been playing. But that's what he does. He sees the ball, and he goes after the ball, and he gets the ball. And he's pretty good tackler. You know, obviously people are going to miss some once in a while. I think he did miss one. He missed one, I think, if I remember correctly, on a play. But he's going to be physical when he gets there. He's going to, you know, make sure he's going to make tackles, you know, in between the two tackles, I guess. And that's a good thing. I my concern is a little bit in coverage. We've talked about this, where him and Dorian Williams together, not great coverage linebackers. Maybe the Jags attack them. We'll see. But the Bills have some time to, you know, get that straight. But I do like the way he is physical and attacks the football.
Now, you kind of led me into the next question there, Sal. With Baylen Spector and Dorian Williams being this pair that we're going to see here, how do you think they can adapt to that, you know, issues in coverage and sort of things like that? Because I feel like with the Jags, it's a little bit of a different opponent than the Dolphins, obviously, right? I mean, Trevor Lawrence is a different quarterback than Tua, but they don't have the wide receivers like the Dolphins do. So is that going to be as much of an issue, or what do you kind of anticipate there with that coverage issue?
Well, I think number one is Evan Engram is a big key component, but I just tweeted out a little while ago, Doug Peterson, the Jaguars coach, said that Engram is, quote, a little bit further away. to me, that sounds like he's not trending to play against the Bills. That would be a massive loss for them. That would be a guy that I think could attack the second level. They'd like to, but you know, they'll have time to prepare. Travis Etienne can catch the ball out of the backfield. It is a much different, you know, team than the Miami Dolphins as far as so receiver-oriented where, yes, they are, and they have guys. Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, they have guys they can throw to. Brian Thomas Jr., obviously, off to a great start. But these are more like, these are guys in the boundary, you know, like Miami has. But what they have is they have guys that they can throw underneath to as well. But again, if they don't have Evan Ingram, that's obviously something that that would be a massive loss for them. So, yeah, look, what can the Bills do? They can stick with playing their dime coverage on passing situations. You put Jamarcus Ingram in there as a dime safety if he is still the guy. We know that Cam Lewis is going to play, you know, nickel corner. And I think that you can blanket the field a little bit more with some coverage players. But then you are susceptible a little bit more to the run. So it's got to be a bit of a balance here in how the Bills want to play it.
Sal, bringing up defense here today, and this has sort of become the main topic of discussion this morning. Did you see Mel Kiper's comments real quick from ESPN today?
I did. I didn't listen to the whole thing. I heard about him, and then I saw a little bit of it.
All right, stupendous. So then my question really is here, is where do you kind of sit with this? For me, at least personally, it's 2 weeks of numbers kind of being down. Now, we do have years showing that it was progressively going down. I just feel like some of us are being a bit aggressive and like rules need to be changed. No, I've got Daniel Jeremiah tweeting out, you know, maybe we should talk about, you know, bringing the hash marks to the college level instead of the pros. And it's just, I feel like we're looking towards maybe a massive overcorrection here just because defense has been ahead of the offense for effectively 5 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. Even if it lasts a whole year, I wouldn't do that. I mean, at some point, isn't it okay to play defense? At some points, isn't it okay for them to do what they have to do to stop the offense? That's the name of the game. I mean, you have an opponent. There's one side of the ball is offense, one side of the ball is defense. And no one seemed to have a problem when offenses were putting up 40 points a game and we had these wild video game numbers. I always kind of hated that, to be honest with you. Everybody says how fun it is. Funny part about this, guys, is like, true story, I kind of lost touch with college football for a few years because it just got so stupid watching everybody score every possession. Like, what are we doing, right? And then the NFL kind of got like that in a bit of a way. I enjoy good defense. It doesn't mean that I'm old school, ground and pound, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. What I do appreciate, though, is the strategy of defense being able to stop offense, making tackles, forcing third and longs, and coming up with strategy and blitzing and sacks, and that's okay. It's okay for me. I can sit and watch a 20-17 or even a 17-10 football game and be thoroughly entertained because of the chess match that goes on. Why do we have to jump right away to, oh my God, we have to make sure that we can score 30 points a game? No, we don't. How about we allow coaches to coach and players to play and allow the game to be what it's supposed to be, which is competitive people on both sides of the ball doing their jobs. I think Mel Kiper is way off. Way off. I mean, come on. What are we talking about here? Changing the outlawing two high safeties? I mean, listen, I played football in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, growing up. And even throughout, you know, coaching in the late 90s, 2000, two high safety has been a staple of the game for a long, long time. Even when quarterbacks were throwing it over the top. There's just different ways that teams are going about it. There's different disguises and coverages. I mean, I just think it's, like you said, a massive overcorrection or reaction to 2 weeks. I think even if it's a whole year of this happening, it would be a massive overreaction and correction.
And yeah, it's just, I made the joke earlier to Josh, too. I'm like, you know, Sean McDermott's probably sitting here, you know, as Bills head coach, defensive guy, too, and he seemingly has, like, the perfect system as this is kind of happening. See, I even think you tweeted that, like, the perfect system at the perfect time. And he's sitting there going like, I'm finally the bride. And then some people in the NFL are like, no, always a bridesmaid. You're a defensive head coach. We cannot allow that. It's just, I'm like, guys, like let's, and I agree with you. I've always been a college football junkie. But yeah, there was a time when it was just like the only time it seemed like you got like any sort of defense was the SEC. And that was somewhat, you know, made fun of for a long time of like, you know, how dare LSU and Alabama finish like 17-14. We need 65-60 and 7 overtimes. I can never get behind that. I'm glad the game is sort of changing. And yeah, I'm with you. Like even after a year, I kind of want to see this go on. I want to see the offense coordinators, you know, for lack of a better phrase, earn their paychecks.
Yeah, for sure. Like there's really smart people that are paying a lot of money to stop these quarterbacks who are just too really talented. They're too good both throwing the ball and running the ball, and they have to figure out ways, you know, to be able to do that. I mean, a game like tonight, I'm actually kind of looking forward to how these two teams who I think have limited offenses, even the Jets with Aaron Rodgers, I think have a limited offense. I'm interested to see how these two teams counteract each other, because it's going to take, you know, the other part of it is now it becomes more on offensive coordinators to scheme and to strategize. It's not just, oh, we have the best quarterback, so we're going to go out there and score points. Hey, fight through it. Figure something out. I read something really good last week about how well the Green Bay Packers were able to adjust to Malik Willis playing quarterback over, you know, instead of Jordan Love. And like, hey, that's a good coaching job. Like, you want to see good coaching jobs, right? That was really good and really nice what they were able to do. Exactly. I think on both sides of the ball, allow these people to do their job, get paid, and you know, let them go out and settle it. We've made a lot of rules that help offenses. And finally, defenses have kind of caught up here. There's been a couple of shifts here and there to help the defense. I think there's less penalties called on them. I hope the NFL does not also go back to that, by the way. That's the one thing I hope I don't see and we don't see, which is, does the league respond by saying, let's start calling more penalties on the defense if they're going to do this, make them pay for it. You know, I don't want to see that either. I think the offenses have had way too much of an advantage over the last several years of football, and it's nice to see it go back the other way a little bit.
So another thing, Sal, that you brought up there a little bit is offensive coordinators kind of changing their games a little bit here. And I mean, we have this young wave of guys that almost got head coaching jobs or did, like in Shane Steichen, or looking at like Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson, even Clint Kubiak down in New Orleans. Is it potentially going to lead to a new wave of offensive thinking? Are these guys going to be the pioneers of something new? Like how we're seeing right now, all these defenses are coming up with this. And I mean, granted, it's been part of the game forever, but it's more of a relevant piece now. Are the offenses going to try to find a new way to counteract that over the next season or two, if as long as the NFL doesn't step in? Because if that happens, then, well, you know, they just stay the same and everything is what it is. But I don't want to see that. I want to see these guys with these new, young offensive minds trying to come up with something new to kind of counteract this.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I think they will. I think that's what they're trying to do and trying to figure it out. But look, they were doing this going into this year. This is not taking coaches by surprise. And if it is taking a coach by surprise, then your coach shouldn't be a coach. Every coach in this league has seen this coming. And if they didn't see it coming, then I don't know, then they're inept, because they should have. I talked to plenty of coaches at the owners' meetings last year, this year, back in March, about this very thing. Sean McDermott brought it up. Brandon Bean brought it up about it when they're at the combine with the owners' meetings. I talked to offensive coaches, Sean McVay, Andy Reid, Brian Daboll, talked to Nick Sirianni. I talked to a lot of these coaches about this, and they all said the same thing. They all saw this coming. And this is what defense has been doing for several years, and offenses are saying, now we have to find a way to react to this. And none of them said, oh my God, I can't believe it. This really sucks. It's like, oh yeah, now we have to find a way to react to this. What are you going to do? And the response has been shorter passes, get the ball to your playmakers. They have to make people miss as far as tackles are concerned. And then you get the ball down the field a little bit of a different way. So yes, I do think it's incumbent now upon these smart offensive coaches to figure out ways to do this. And that's what we're seeing, maybe the separation between some of the teams that have or haven't yet.
And it kind of puts into perspective what the Bills were doing this offseason, at least on the offensive side of the ball. It's early through two games now. We got, you know, week three coming up here starting tonight. But the Bills effectively got, you know, three slot receivers, Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, and you know, if you want to throw in Dalton Kincaid in there as well, they've gotten bigger on offense. They seem more, you know, geared towards Yak. I think the Bills were kind of showing you that they knew what was coming, and now they potentially have the personnel to combat it. At least so far, I've kind of enjoyed how the offense has played. We haven't really gotten to see them, though, have a massive game yet, Sal. I mean, me and Josh are talking about it, too. Against the Cardinals, they ran the ball a lot in the first half going up against last year a really bad run defense. It worked in the first half, not too much in the second, but they pivoted and started passing. And then against Miami, you couldn't really see much. It was short time of possession due to turnovers, and the game was kind of over really fast. We haven't really had to see the Bills' offense kind of, you know, flex their muscles a little bit and really stretch out and kind of see a full game plan.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, what the Jags are going to do against the Bills. If you guys read Warren Sharp at all, he's real good with some of this stuff. He actually tweeted out today, he has his preview, and he wrote that the Jags actually run a lot of man coverage, and Josh Allen just torches man coverage. And this year, he's only seen it 16 times. Of those 16 times, he's thrown three touchdowns and averaging 8 yards an attempt. So if the Jags want to run man-to-man against Josh, well, Josh A can really beat that with his arm, and then now it's on your receivers to have that separation where, you know, that might be why teams would run man coverage. They don't think the Bills have the receivers to separate. But let's also remember, if you run man coverage, you're very much risking Josh Allen to run against you and use his legs, which is really what happened on the play that Buda Baker, you know, he jumped over him because there's a lane there because guys are running with their back turned because they're following receivers, and then Josh sees a lane, he can go. So I'm interested, too, in what the Jags will try to do to combat the Bills offense, which has been at the forefront of this whole thing that we're talking about here.
See, I really needed to hear that because I think you brought it up yesterday, too. You don't buy into the whole, like, historical, like, you know, results and stuff like that. I'm the opposite. I really do. So whenever I see the Bills playing the Jaguars, I'm like, oh, no, not again. Not another game against the Jaguars. So I need, like, any positivity going into this because I find myself almost dreading Monday night, and I shouldn't. Like, they have not looked good offensively. Drops still seem to be a bit of an issue for the Jaguars. Their offensive line, even with the addition of Mitch Morse, has not been very good really at all. And then, yeah, I mean, the injury to Evan Engram as well is going to really, I think, hurt their offense. He's one of the only, I don't want to say consistent weapons, but I mean, he's kind of one of the only, like, guys you can definitively go to. The other guy seems to be rookie Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU.
Yeah, he's off to a really good start. Gabe Davis is exactly the player for the Jags as he has been for the Bills so far. They'll use him for some stuff down the field. He's not going to get a lot of separation even down the field, but really, you know, on certain routes, coming back, you know, breaking in, breaking out, things like that. But they'll use him there. We'll see if they have anything in store for him specifically this week because of, you know, playing against his former team. I think the Jags have a lot of talent on offense, and they have a very good offensive-minded head coach. They are reeling here. They can't go 0-3. They know that. I think they're going to have a lot of attention to detail to practice this week. If they come to Buffalo and beat the Bills, I will not say it's because the Jags and the Bills, and this is what always happens, and this is historical. I will just think that they played a better game that day. Although, to your point, I would respect anybody who thinks that, because obviously there's a bit of a history here now.
It's super fun. I hear the name Urban Meyer and I just roll my eyes. It hurts.
Sal, yep.
Last thing for me. We will not be able to talk tomorrow. I am heading out of town. I'm going to a wedding. But we have a very exciting college football game tomorrow night as historic ACC rivals Stanford at Syracuse. How are we feeling?
Good. I think Syracuse is favored. This is not a great Stanford team, and Syracuse obviously is playing pretty well. They're getting votes right now. I don't think they're top 25. I think they are getting votes in some of the polls that I've seen. But I'm pretty sure if I look, I think they were favored the last time I checked.
8.5-point favorites.
Yeah. So look, their dome's going to be rocking on a Friday night, and Syracuse has a really good opportunity here, guys, to be a pretty good team. You know, they beat a nice Georgia Tech team. They have Stanford. They get Holy Cross. They do have a very tough game at UNLV coming up in October, you know, and then a lot of the ACC games are going to be battles. NC State, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Boston College. There's some good teams in there, but I think Syracuse has been holding their own. The biggest thing for me, you know, watching them, boy, Kyle McCord, what a great, great pickup through the transfer portal. He's looked fantastic so far. They're one of the top offensive teams in the country, specifically throwing the football right now. They have receivers, Aronde Gadsden. He's really a tight end, but he's a, you know, receiver. He's switched to tight end, basically. They have some really nice players on that side of the ball, and I just think that they've done a really good job of kind of incorporating how you have to play now in college football as well.
Should be a fun game. 7:30 kickoff at the Dome. All right, Sal, we'll let you get out of here, get ready for practice, and we'll talk again later.
You got it, guys.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the Wester Hotline. And, yeah, Syracuse has been a lot of fun. Fran Brown's building a really good program. Came over with a lot of recruiting acumen into the college game. And, yeah, they blew out Ohio 38-22. Georgia Tech, a team coming off that fun Florida State win, which ultimately has looked way worse as the weeks have gone on.
What's going on with Florida State? Are they just always... They're just bad, right?
DJ, So we just saw the GM thing come out with College Sports yesterday.
Yeah, right.
Adrian Wojnarowski becoming the men's basketball GM at St. Bonaventure. I don't want to totally jump into this yet. I'm somewhat reading on this because of the GM stuff now. I'm like, ooh, I kind of want to know what's going on here, all that stuff. A lot of major programs have these guys already, guys and gals in college football. Florida State is one of them. And it does seem to be Florida State's guy really handles the recruiting, and that has been the biggest issue. From what I've seen, I want to read more on it, but yeah, they've been a disaster. They look bad. The biggest thing there too, Josh. And obviously, you know, there's no preseason really in college football.
Yeah.
They'll play FCS teams or lower ranked teams, you know, bye games, but there's no real preseason. So a lot of what, you know, the hype we get around these teams is reporters and people like that going to these spring practices and these fall practices and talking to the coaching staffs and, you know, somewhat off the record being like, tell us about the team, you know, like so that we can kind of put this all together. And they'll be as honest as they can be with you. And that's where you can kind of end up seeing like what programs are truly stunned by either their success or their failures. It's typically failures. Florida and Florida State seem to be the examples of stunned by their failures. Florida State came in talking about how good their defensive line was, how DJU is going to be an amazing quarterback for them, and they think they've got the right system for them, what, you know, what have you. Florida, their AD goes on the Paul Feinbaum show the day before the Miami game, talking about how amazing this game is going to be. Florida's here, you know, they've got DJ Lagway, a quarterback, or, you know, as a freshman quarterback, and he's coming in next year. Like, we're going to be amazing. And what has happened to both teams? They've been completely wrong on everything, and they look shell-shocked by it. That's where if you're a fan, you're really concerned, is when your coaching staff looks like they have no answers because everything they thought in the preseason, effectively preseason, has proven to be completely false. I will say, though, real quick on Syracuse, super pumped for that UNLV game. Who does UNLV think they are? They look really good, and they saw some teams going to the quote-unquote Pac-12. Pack six, six pack, love it.
And, six pack,
and they're like, and they're like, wait a second. I saw that on Twitter. That is not my idea.
Oh,
that is,
man,
not my idea.
I thought you just put that on the fly.
No, that is not my. I saw it on Twitter. And UNLV was like, oh, we're the Vegas market, baby. You better be like looking at us. We're not the two win team UNLV you knew for like 15 years. We're good now.
So, you know, you were talking a lot there about concern and issues and problems. You know what I just stumbled upon on Twitter? There's drama in Bearsland in Chicago.
Oh, no.
Roma Dunze's father is tweeting out videos of Roma Dunze wide open on routes.
Good.
James Odunze, this quote, I'm reading it, or this tweet, I'm reading it word for word. So, a quick reference guide for those who were, for those with the initials DO and work for the Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. And he typed it out so you could read down, and it says ESPN. And I mean, it's one video of Roman Dunze being wide open in the end zone, but it's in response to the like a chart of notable rookie wide receiver separation rates, and Roman Dunze is not on the list, or he's fifth on the list. I should say. Sorry, he's fifth on the list, but still. So it sounds like his dad's taking a little. Offense there.
Two games in, he's already upset.
Now, and the question is he mad at the Bears? Is he mad at ESPN? Is he mad at both? What's the deal?
Never forget, sports is the best trashy TV show that you're addicted to. Don't give me Gossip Girl. Don't give me Emily in Paris. Don't even give me Love Island and all that stuff. It is sports. It is the best trashy TV show you can get. 803-0550 is the number to call. Rob will get to your call after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Over the course of my seven-year career so far, you know, the first 2 weeks, they're important, but in the grand scheme of things, it's 2 weeks, right? So whether we're 2-0, 0-2, 1-1, you know, there's 15 games still left to be played, and no more bigger than the one that's in front of us right now, Monday night. But happy for those guys for getting some credit that they deserve. But if you ask them, they'd probably say they don't care much about it as well.
That was Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen. Talking about some of the early awards that have been given out. Greg Rousseau, Week 1 AFC Defensive Player of the Week. James Cook, Week 2 AFC Offensive Player of the Week. I just want one player to be like, you know what? I was really happy about getting the award. It really meant a lot to me. Just one time, just be like, it actually meant a ton. I
be
called
grateful.
My mom immediately.
I would have thought, why didn't Jamarcus Ingram get Defensive Player of the Week? But then I'm like, well, his two interceptions were basically gifts.
Yeah. The pick six, though, you would have... Yeah. But, like, I just one time, I'd like James Cook to go up, like, how'd you feel? Instead of, like, you know, the team first. And I get it. I'm all for it. I understand it. But one time, I'd like him to get up there, smile on his face, and go, you know what? It really meant a ton, actually.
You know what? I had three touchdowns, and I felt great.
And I was given credit for it, and I felt amazing. Just one time. All I'm asking is one time.
You know what? I burned Jordan Poyer down the sideline, and I scored a touchdown, and I did a backflip or front flip, and it was really cool.
It was really cool. Also, I felt like Superman for 5 minutes.
Bills legend of the game.
Who do we got
for Monday? Any guesses?
No.
You're not going to get it.
No.
John Fina, offensive lineman.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And we're talking about offensive lines today. Boom. There we go.
Also, speaking of offenses, more clarity on the Roma Dunze thing. So the real reason... I thought it was because of the whole pass or the separation rate and everything like that. The real reason, the whole reason that Roma Dunze's dad appears to be going after Dan Orlovsky, and not appears to be, he just flat out said the initials D-O
straight up is.
That works for ESPN. Dan Orlovsky tweeted yesterday, quote, "The Bears and Caleb Williams are going to have to get more comfortable giving Rome more covered opportunities. Rome isn't getting open at this level right now. Caleb will have to get comfortable throwing him some 50-50 balls." And then, once again, Roma Dunze's father tweets out a video of him being wide open in the end zone. And mind you, it's a 3-second video. So
Johnny Man, sports,
that's the only one.
Sports are the best trashy TV show you watch. Again, it's not Gossip Girl. It's not Emily in Paris. It's not The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. It's not Love is Blind.
Some of the reality ones where it's like it's real life, like the dating ones, those get pretty...
Love is Blind is up
pretty
there.
Pretty nasty. Yeah, yeah.
I'm two episodes in Love is Blind UK. It's bad, and I love every second of it. I only will watch like one episode a week, but I'm all for it. I need that palate cleanser, Josh. I do. Like I watch, you know, some, like I'm thinking about rewatching The Sopranos. I watch The Americans on FX. The West Wing I always rewatch every now and then. Obviously, everyone.
It's getting to the time of year where I'm going to rewatch Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers. It's gritty.
Like the fall, winter time, that's when you like.
Did you ever watch Masters of the Air on Apple TV?
I've not yet.
Okay.
I'm waiting for it to all come out so I can just like binge it.
Yep. Oh, that's already out.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well.
That's done.
Guess what I'm doing this weekend.
You're going to have to do that. That's phenomenal. But yeah, so I'll watch like the gritty, you know, TV shows where afterwards I'm like, all right, I need to go make myself a drink. I'm exhausted. Like I'm not going right. to think about my life.
The show was supposed to be for a break and you need a break from the break.
Exactly. You know, even when I read more like gritty, you know, harder material. I just read Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian. It changed me as a person. I need to watch like Love is Blind every now and then. You know, I need to watch Love Island where I'm like,
yeah, right.
I'm in an okay spot. Right. I may not be, you know, that pretty, but I'm in a good spot. I'm all right. I'm doing okay. I need that every now and then.
But hey, it compares to sports too. It's like, you know what? Look, these guys are fighting at each other, and sure, they're better at that sport than me, but hey, I'm not having arguments with my friends.
You don't understand, though, how real it was for me to watch bad Texas teams like lose to Kansas when Kansas was still bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm going to actively search out a bad like MAC game to make myself feel better. I'm so I mean that genuinely. Like I'd find like Kent State versus Akron and be like, yeah, my Texas though will whoop y'all. It was I'm not proud of it. I think it's fair to be open about it. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Rob in Connecticut. Rob, man, how are we doing today?
Good morning, Zach. Good morning, Josh. I don't know if Josh told you what happened last week. He usually doesn't answer the phone when Brownie and Tasker are on. So when I called and he answered, I was like, oh, hey, Zach, how you doing today? And he's like, I'm all right. And I said, Zach, you're all right. You don't sound like yourself. Is everything okay? And he's like, that's because I'm not Zach. It's Josh.
A little behind the scenes, yeah. It depends on the day, but we'll transition. We'll go through the transition, and it sometimes happens seamlessly. Other times it doesn't, where like we'll be talking with our boss or what have you, and all of a sudden a half hour's gone by, and it's like, oh, no.
Yeah. So that was kind of funny. Speaking of TV shows, I just put on the Aaron Hernandez story.
Oh, that's right. That started, yeah.
Yeah, I caught up with that. It's hard for me to watch, so I have to ask my fiance, like, when they're not talking, I was like, what's going on? Because I could kind of figure out what happened by watching the documentary. But other than that, I was listening to you guys before Sal came on and talking about the whole defense, you know, the safety drops and this and that and rule changes. And I started getting a little nutty in the head with that. I was like, no rule changes. Come on. You know, I was like, let the players play and the coordinators coordinate. And then Sal comes on and goes, let the players play and the coaches coach. Mm-hmm. I said, what's he, inside my head? He said exactly what I was going to say to you before Sal even came on. It was like when baseball, the pitchers count. They started putting down it. That's the strategy of the game. The defensive coordinator and the coaches figured out what to do, how to stop offenses, all right? And I mean, that's part of the game. That's like saying you can't move this chess piece a certain way. Oh, well, we're going to change it so you can move that chess piece a certain way. Mm-hmm. It's like, leave it alone. And if you want to watch exciting, wide open football, Saturday, all day, college football, go watch that. That's fun and exciting to watch, but leave the NFL alone. You know, it's like, let them do what they do. You know?
Yeah, it's absolutely. Like, I mean, that's where I've been at, Rob. Yeah, and Rob, thanks for the call, man. And that's kind of been my thing, too, is just like rule changes for health-wise, all for it. All for it. Rule changes to make the game, quote-unquote, more exciting, I'm not really a fan of the kickoff rule. I'll be perfectly honest. I think it went exactly how I thought it was going to, or more or less fear how it was going to. We talked about it a lot in the offseason, which is teams will find out it's just better to boot it out of the end zone, take the touchback, and start at, what, the 30? Rather than, we saw it with the Bills, kick it, let them return it, and all of a sudden, you know, players couldn't run down the field. They couldn't get there. They couldn't beat their blocks until the guy touched the ball, and it causes a lot of issues. Now teams are just like, nah, boot out of the end zone. It's the same play where you're just like, all right, it's bathroom break, it's snack break. I'm going to start a conversation here, what have you. I know we're going to go to commercial after this anyways. Who cares? And like that, you know, it's a shame, but that's kind of what it became. And that's where I'm at. Is it rule changes to quote unquote make the game more exciting, I don't think oftentimes work. I actually, though, to Rob's point, he brought up baseball. I actually didn't hate the pitch clock, which is funny because my dad is a baseball purist. So that has started some fiery conversations between him, myself, and my brother. But for me, I was like, I'm okay with that. I think there is some, you know, mystique and almost, you know, beauty in like a you know, an October baseball game going to, you know, October playoff baseball game going to like 2 a.m. I don't need that in July, you know? I don't need a game that's half empty in, you know, April, May to go 7 hours. I don't need that. Right. You know, I don't need that.
Well, and also think about, you know, Joe brought it up a little bit earlier, the two-line pass rule in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
The two-line pass rule was killing the NHL, and they got rid of it after the 2004-2005 lockout, and it created more offense. I mean, I know you're not newer to hockey, but I know hockey wasn't really your thing back then, but the two-line pass rule was the stupidest thing I've ever seen, and I was like a child, and I knew that.
I was
five, and I understood that it was the stupidest thing in the world. You couldn't pass from blue line to blue line and not get called for it. It was awful. And they got rid of it to make the game more exciting. But that's a moment where you made a rule, it was a dumb rule, and you tried to get it to slow the game down a little bit, and it actively hurt you. Mm-hmm. This, in the other way, on the other hand, would be completely different. You're hurting yourself still because you're limiting what these teams have to do to figure out how to be better. When you are when you are actively saying, you guys figured out what to do, but you can't do it anymore. That's just wrong. I don't like that. Like I don't like the idea of it's just giving the offense as a cop out.
Yeah.
Like you can't do that. You shouldn't do that.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, real quick, do want to bring up something here because I think we kind of forgot to bring it up because we brought on Sal, but we did get an update on Rasmus Dahlin's injury.
We did.
Lindy Ruff, speaking with the media, doing well, just will probably miss a couple of days of practice, so nothing too serious. Crisis averted, everyone relax.
Everyone exhale. For now.
We were joking in the break with our boss. It's like, maybe my joke about Dahlin's gone. A little aggressive.
Also, if anyone's seen practice pictures coming out today, Lindy Ruff's back. He made players, when they had bad line changes, do sprints and push-ups.
Oh, I'm seeing the picture now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... Sabres hockey's back.
So you're taking this much more positive route. So just to be contrarian, I'm going to take this in the negative route.
No, stop.
Going to be real interesting to see if this team does not react well to a more old school coach, I guess. Old school, more authoritarian a little bit. Definitely much more accountability. I am now completely into observing how this team is operating in practice.
If
the vibes are like all of a sudden they're all like angry all the time and they're getting snippy with people or what have you, like, I'm into like watching this because you wanted this, guys.
Exactly.
And to be fair, you needed it.
You needed
accountability.
If that becomes a problem where everyone gets all upset, we're just going to play the clips of craving accountability on a loop for 24 hours because this is what the team wanted.
It's going to be Radiothon for clips of the Sabres talking about accountability.
And you know what, though? I don't think that's going to happen. right? The amount of players on this team that wanted that accountability, and they probably all did in some way, but some of them just maybe weren't as vocal as others. But I don't think that you're going to have a whole team turn on its head in a whole offseason and be like, wait, this isn't what we meant. This is what accountability is. Wait,
no.
No,
I agree.
Is exactly what that group wanted. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, the group is still the same. And the players that came in, same kind of players. So it's not like you're bringing in a, you know,
completely new team with a new coach, with a new identity.
Well, I was going to say this type of player that would be upset with the accountability. That's not what they were looking for. They knew they wanted to go in this direction. So they being the ownership group, not the players themselves. But it just feels, that part feels different.
Yep. 803-0550 is the number to call. Bob will get your call on the other side. You're listening to Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Quick final segment here. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt. It is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We have been connected to our fans today. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And we are going to go back to the phones here as we've got Bob on the line. Bob, good morning. How are we doing today?
Good. How are you?
Doing very well.
I just, I love your show. Just wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on if Yuri Kulik actually gets a shot this year, and he dominated in the Prospect Challenge. He's gotten maybe two or three shifts in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to see, because they actually didn't address the top six, but like they said they would in the off season, and just wanted your guys' thoughts. I'm just still kind of upset that they brought Ruff back and didn't actually do a coach search. Settling for mediocrity. I mean, do we bring back Darcy Regier at the same way? I mean, just.
I definitely get it.
Yeah. Your guys' thoughts.
I get it, Bob. Yeah, thanks for the call, man. I will tell you, I was closer to what Bob was saying when Ruff was first hired. I was very much somebody that was like, this is a nostalgia hire. I was upset at the talk of there was a coach search, and then he was like the first head coach hired. I was like,
right.
Was there?
That was a bit questionable.
And to be fair, I want to see the results. I'm excited that Lee's there. I'm kind of on the same path with you where, you know, we are seeing accountability. They're essentially running laps.
Right.
You know, they're doing push-ups. You know, they're calling back drills, what have you. It sounds like that fits Rasmus Dahlin's personality as well. I heard Paul Hamilton talking about
this. He's not practicing.
No. on the Yuri Kulik thing, though, it feels like he has to really get a shot here.
And to his point there, I don't think he's going to be part of the top six, but I do think he's going to be part of the lineup. I don't think he, unless he comes in there and he, you know, proves himself very well, I just don't see him getting a spot in that top six yet. I mean, you have Benson, Quinn, Paterka, Cousins, Tage, Tuck. There's your top six. I don't know the lines or whatever, but as long as everyone performs the same way they did last year and better, that's your top six.
Mm-hmm.
And on the bottom six, you have guys like Zucker, Abe Kubel, Jordan Greenway, Peyton Krebs, Beck Malenstein, Sam Lafferty, and just one other guy I'm forgetting.
It's all right.
It's okay.
It's okay.
But there's one other one. And Kulik.
Yeah.
So there is a spot for him if he earns it, I think. He has
now
to.
We were talking about this yesterday, too, because of the groups that were all put together. Mm-hmm. And this is very much a theory. I have no inside knowledge on this.
Right.
But him being part of that first group, I was like, ooh.
Ryan McLeod's the other one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. For me, with Kulik, it was, you know, seeing him part of that first group, it was like, all right, are they kind of putting him in a position of, you're on the roster until you prove you're not on the roster?
I think to a point he is, but I think it's also, this is the European roster, because they have to take extra, they can and they will take extra guys to Europe. I mean, you're halfway around the world. You're going to want to have a few extra bodies just in case injuries pop up, or you just want to see what other players look like. And I think that it's important that he's on that roster, because if he wasn't, then it's like, yeah, no, he's going to Rochester this year for sure. And I'm not saying that for every player that's not going to Europe, but a guy like Yuri Kulik, who you expect to be in the NHL, if he's not on that roster that's going to Europe, there's question marks for sure. And there's
especially with Matt Savoy no longer being a part of the organization,
exactly.
Kulik has sort of taken that spot as, I'm now the number one prospect.
Right.
It's arguably, but you know, you can argue he's the number one prospect now, and you want to see eventually one of these first round picks take that step and are now on the roster outside of Zach Benson, who is very much an outlier coming in at 18, first training camp, and makes the roster like that. And to be fair, probably also was a signal that the Sabres roster was not as talented as we were all hoping.
Yeah, and real quick, on some NHL ownership news, Andy Strickland, the beat reporter for Bally Sports Midwest for the St. Louis Blues, he tweets out, NHL owners will be meeting soon to approve the expansion opening. Leading candidates and ownership groups are believed to be in Houston and Atlanta.
Interesting. Didn't bring up Sioux Falls, South Dakota there.
Stop it. Where is this coming from?
I think that's a huge miss.
What are you talking about?
Sioux Falls, South Dakota feels like a hockey hotbed. That's going to do it for me and Josh Schmidt. You'll have Sal Capaccio tomorrow. He'll be meeting with Bills head coach Sean McDermott as well as we get ready for Monday Night Football after this weekend. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. This is WGR.